This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, Sirius XM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Hey!
In the house on this Monday morning. Carl Sack will join us later on the show, talk NBA Finals. Raheem Palmer standing by to talk NBA Finals with us. Raheem from The Ringer and FanDuel TV. Wes Reynolds as well. I wonder if Wes, did Wes see the Earth, Wind & Fire doc yet? Earth, Wind & Fire documentary premiered last night on HBO Max.
I did. You know, it was funny. I was flipping around channels and I saw it was on. I did put it on for like 3 minutes. I moved on. I was like, Gil's going to be talking about this tomorrow.
No, I was too tired to start. I have to be alert. Take the Beatles out of this. They're the greatest band that's ever existed.
HBO did them right, man. Last night it was the, you know how they
the
like
greatest
keep,
group who's ever existed.
You know how they keep just like rerunning something if it's big that night? It was like on like 5 consecutive hours.
You can't. It's got to be awesome. We get tweets beating the book. Rick Zapsky going back and forth about the whole thing. He said, balance starting five, where all five players bring something to the table and a great bench. How they win might be different, but how the teams are built are the same. I guess that's back to the this year's Knicks comparison to the 04 Pistons. Oh, I'll let those guys battle it out on that. Dennis Zelensky just bet all Hoops Peterson baseball bets into a parlay at 100-1. Play ball. Not that easy. Okay. And Klee Picks, not to be confused with Cleve TA, Klee Picks, guys, you are correct on Parker, just wrong on the year. Yeah, I thought so. 07, Tony Parker was the best player on that Spurs team in the sweep of the LeBron James, Drew Gooden, Eric Snow Cavs. Also not sure if it qualifies, but don't forget they gave the 2015 Finals MVP to Andre Iguodala over Steph for slowing down LeBron to 35, 13, and 8. That's great. Well, you got to slow him down to 35, 13, and 8. Got to give him the MVP.
Tim Duncan was better 7 years earlier.
No, for sure. For sure you're right about that.
That's right. Tim Duncan on that team. He was an old man in 2014. Tim Duncan was still great.
We forgetting some.
I love it. We might be. I love these types of topics because I knew we were going to get a few great tweets.
Let's talk some NBA Finals this year. This is a gentleman who not only works at The Ringer and FanDuel TV, you can follow him on Twitter at I Am Rostradamus, but he's been on the Knicks every which way in games 1 and 2. I'm not sure he's going to stop in game 3. He's just back from Sweden where he's going to brag to us a little bit about his trip to Sweden. It's Raheem Palmer back on the show. How you doing, Raheem?
Man, life is good. I'm a little jet lagged, but, you know, we were in Sweden all last week, Stockholm, partying it up, 20th anniversary party for Spotify, you know, Travis Scott performed, you know, we were betting the Knicks, watching the Knicks at like 2:30 in the morning. I had everybody in the gym at 5 a.m., so it was a great trip.
Wow. And he explained to me, Spotify owns The Ringer, Spotify headquartered in Sweden. I didn't know any of these things, so that's why Sweden was the trip.
I basically did the same thing last week.
Did you?
It was just, you know, here, yeah.
Good for you, Raheem. I never have this kind of life.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's
never,
great.
Never works out for me that way. Raheem, before this series started, you were all about the Knicks. You took them in game 1 with the points on the money line. You took them in game 2 with the points on the money line. Why did you have so much conviction on the Knicks in this series?
So first things first, if you go back to the in-season tournament championship, you know, the Knicks were laying 2.5 on a neutral court. And I actually thought that line was absurd because – if you ask me, the Thunder were laying like 10 to the Spurs. So you're telling me that the Thunder were like 7 points better than the Knicks at the time? I just didn't buy that. So I bet the Knicks in the in-season tournament. They played again on December 31st. And if you watch that game, the Knicks were dominating that game, completely dominating that game. And then, you know, they blew like a 15-point lead. Julian Champagne hit 11 threes, and the Spurs end up winning. So then they played again on March 1st. And I think the Knicks opened up as 1-point favorites. Sharps hit it and made it Spurs -1. I came in on the Knicks +1. And I'm like, this is an absurd line. So I basically am betting the Knicks in this matchup the entire year. Like literally the entire year I've been betting it. So then I run my model before this, you know, the finals. And I make this number Spurs -140. And I actually make the Spurs 2.5-point favorites for game 1 and 2. So obviously, I'm in it to win it. I'm betting the Knicks every which way. I'm betting them before the series, and I'm also betting them games 1 and 2 on the money line and the spread. And here's the more important thing. If you look at Victor Wembanyama, he dominated the Thunder this season. They pretty much won all of his minutes. Well, against the Knicks, that hasn't been the case. You go back to December 16th, Wemby lost his minutes, minus 18. You go back to March 1st, they lost his minutes, minus 15. You go to the game one, minus 3. Even game two, he was plus six, but that required the Spurs to go on a 12-0 run at the end of the game. So Wemby hasn't been that superstar-level impact against this Knicks team, and I think they're his kryptonite. So that's why I like the Knicks in this series, because I feel like they have guys where they can throw at him in Carl Anthony Towns and Mitchell Robinson.
And you got him plus 170 before the series started, based on everything you just talked about. To the person, no names, to the person who would say, okay, that's great, Raheem, it's worked out for you, but Spurs led by double digits in both games one and two. Wemby was 6 of 21 in game one. Spurs missed 8 free throws in game two. Knicks deserve both games, right? But it could very easily, then of course the turnover at the end of game two when Wembanyama and Stephon Castle's, you know, head turns and Wembanyama throws it to him. What about the person who says, yeah, this could very easily be 1-1. Maybe even there's a world where the Spurs are up 2-0 after leading in double digits and having late leads in both games. You would say what to that person?
You know, at the end of the day, it is you are betting prices. So if you ask me, I think what were the Spurs to open this series? You're talking about in the minus 200 range? I just didn't think that was the case. So I felt like I had an edge regardless because I had the Spurs in a minus 140 range. I thought, you know, they're about 57% chance of winning as opposed to what the market says. So I felt like I had an edge in that regard anyway. But then if you look at the way the games played out, the Spurs had an 8-0 run late in the fourth quarter of game one. And then they had a 12-0 run late in the fourth quarter of game two. So, you know, you move this series on the road, and I don't know if they're going to get those same runs in clutch time. And then more importantly, if you look at, like, Wemby's not having the impact on the court that he's had in previous series. But more importantly, when he's off the court, they're really struggling. When Wemby is off the court, they're a minus 28.5. So it just feels like the Knicks bench and the Knicks role players are better in this series. So I feel like I have an edge regardless.
Tim Bowers, right as you're saying that, tweets, prediction, Spurs get an 8-10 point lead in the second quarter. The Knicks get back in the game when Wemby goes to the bench. So maybe not the exact script you're talking about, but obviously highlighting the Wemby goes to the bench part. So I guess same, third verse, same as the first couple for you, Raheem, on this. You're going with the Knicks again tonight?
So I am going with the Knicks, but I have to preface this. This is a very, very difficult handicap because we all know that this is a market. Like this is not, you know, things don't stay the same. So in game one and game two, obviously the Spurs were 6.5-point favorites. And my motto had the Knicks plus 2.5. But in this one, my motto actually has the Knicks minus 1.5. And I think I have another motto that has this minus 1.7. I got to remind everybody that on March 1st, the Knicks closed as 1-point favorites. I mean, 1-point dogs. So you kind of have to ask yourself, you know, did they make too much of an adjustment? I mean, you're looking at like a 7.5-point, like an 8-point line move from games 2 to 3. So this is really, really tough for me, but I can't see this Knicks team losing at home. And I also think there's an experience factor, which is tough for the Spurs to overcome. So I'm going to pay to see it. I'm laying it with the Knicks on the money line, minus 130. But I do have to preface this. There's only been 3 teams in NBA history have lost the first 2 games at home. Obviously, the Spurs are the third. You go back to 1993. The Suns lost the first 2 games at home. They won game 3 in triple overtime, outright as 8-point underdogs. You go back to 1995, the Magic. They lost the first 2 games at home. They lost game 3. By 3, they covered as 4-point role underdogs. So if this line were higher, I probably would find myself on the Spurs. If this were like 3 or 4, you know, based on my model being Knicks minus 1.5, I probably would be on the Spurs. But the fact that this line is, you know, 2, and I can get minus 130 on the Knicks at home in this spot, you know, with the experience factor, I'm gonna lay it with the Knicks. And if the Spurs beat me, I can live with it. I mean, I've won 13 straight games on the Knicks. I have enough money to play with.
93 series that you reference is the Barkley versus Jordan series, where Barkley says is our destiny, and Jordan said to him, "It's your destiny to lose to us." And then 95 was the Magic team where Nick Anderson missed the four consecutive free throws in game one for the Orlando Magic of that series. Okay, and you have a prop bet tonight, Raheem, before you go?
Yeah, I'm going with Landry Shamet over 8.5 points. This guy's averaging 6.5 3-point attempts per game. So, you know, I think the volume is there for him to get over here. And, you know, I think this should probably go over easily. He's hit 13 points in the last two games. The volume of 3-point attempts that he's taken, I'll take this bet anytime.
Landry Shamet over 8.5 points tonight for the Knickerbockers tonight at MSG. Raheem, because I know you love such things, have you been to Carbone Riviera yet?
I have. I've been multiple times.
Multiple times. Wow, I forgot who I was talking to.
But I'll be honest with you, the regular Carbone is better.
See, I was prepared to say that, but then I had an unbelievable pasta. So I don't know.
Lobster pasta?
The crab pasta. It was ridiculous.
Oh, the crab pasta. Okay.
It was ridiculous.
They both sound terrible.
Lobster pasta, crab pasta. Raheem Ballmer.
You know what it is, though? I mean, the regular Carbone is home. I got guys over there. Shouts to my guy Bernie. Shouts to my guy Nick. Like, they treat me like family. So Raheem, it's kind of hard to, like, I was just in the regular Carbone last week,
Raheem,
before I left for Sweden.
We live in the same house, but in different rooms, apparently. I know all those guys. We gotta show up there together at some point, right?
We do. We really. You know what? Y'all sent me. It was so crazy when the Super Bowl was here. Y'all sent me an invite. Yeah. I think it was you and Rufus Peabody and Kelly, and I couldn't make it for whatever reason. I don't know why, but we gotta do it again.
We don't hold it against you, Raheem Palmer, everybody from The Ringer and FanDuel TV. You can find him on Twitter at @IAmRostradamus. Raheem, great seeing you. Next time you go to Sweden, maybe send us an invite as well. We appreciate it.
Most definitely. Y'all have a good one.
You too. Coming back with Wes Reynolds and some other stuff. It's a numbers game in VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Don't forget about our latest podcast. This is actually a repurposing of what they do on Buy the Books every morning. Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross, they get together. They talk about every single game on the Major League Baseball slate. It's called VSiN Daily Diamond. Breaking down the slate one game at a time. Available on your favorite podcast platform, whatever that might be. For the baseball junkie, the baseball hardo, as we like to say. Mm-hmm. Jensen and Dave do a great job with that. VSiN Daily Diamond. Check it out if you're looking for an edge in baseball from VSiN, the sports betting network. Tweets, beating the book.
Dave Ross also breaking down one fight every day from the UFC 250.
On the White House lawn.
On the White House lawn.
Yeah, let me just explain something to you. For those of us who grew up in D.C., I don't know if you know this, but it's June, and it's outside, right? It's D.C. was built on a swamp.
Yeah.
So it is, like, stupid humid, and there's mosquitoes. By the way, you know what was interesting? Todd came down. We played tennis a few weeks back. Todd came down from Pittsburgh to play tennis. We were outside, and Todd, you know, is from Pittsburgh, which geographically, I guess, is not that far away. But, you know, on the East Coast, the two things don't meet. I never went to Pittsburgh. He rarely went to D.C. The thing that he was bothered by the most, which I found so funny because it's something that I just take for granted, wasn't the mosquitoes, because the mosquitoes weren't in full effect yet when he was on. It was the gnats.
Hmm.
The gnats, and I'm not talking about the Washington Nationals. I'm talking about the GNATs. He couldn't believe the problem with the gnats. So I'm just curious how these fighters, in Dave's handicap on these fights, how he's just going to be like, a few of these guys are going to melt.
We were, Danny, Rob, and I were talking about it before the show. Definitely the most interesting factor to this, this card, right? We don't see these outside. So these guys were talking about, I believe Rob Moreno said that we have a heavyweight fight first and the last on the card. So right away, you're going to get a sense for how much the humidity has affected these guys.
Good
Not
luck.
Last. Sorry, Danny.
Dude, we played basketball outside. You are drenched. You are sopping wet within 2 minutes.
Well, then there's we spin that conversation forward. It's not how much fatigue factor, but also like what's the ring conditions like or octagon conditions. Sorry.
Good luck. Wish to ever be complaining about the Nats the whole time.
There probably is going to be a bunch of sweat and stuff on the octagon. You would think.
We used to have these like old wives' tales things about the Nats too. Like if you grew up in that area, it's like, oh no, just raise like people. If you saw baseball diamonds, you'd be like outfielders with their arms raised because the conventional wisdom was the Nats go to the highest point on your body.
Oh, it was, God. So that was the way to get away from your face or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just like this the whole time. That's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. NBA Finals. Let's do a little proposition wager, shall we?
Yeah.
We've been doing this for the... We did it for the conference finals. We'll do it for the NBA Finals. So this is through two games, obviously, with the Knicks up 2-0. Total points scored. You can bet on who, when this series is over, whether it's four games in the end total, 5, 6, or 7, right? Could be quick, could be long from now. Right now, a chance to bet on who will ultimately end up as the points leader. Let's start with points. Currently, Victor Wembanyama. I think you've heard of him. He has 55 points through two games. Jalen Brunson of the Knicks has 50. Cat has 39. OG Anunoby has 34. So Victor, with a 5-point lead over Jalen Brunson, is minus 170 to conclude the series, Kelly, with the points lead. Jalen Brunson plus 130 to do the same. What do you think?
Man, with the Spurs down two games here, I said Wemby before we looked at this. Before the finals, I think I'd have to stay there, Gil.
Yeah.
Like Brunson, the first two games, it has been a ton of shots. What did I say? 56 earlier. It's a ton, but I think when we talk about all these, we need to talk about at least the potential reality that the series is ending sooner rather than later, right?
So that's why I prefaced it that way.
So, yeah, like longer odds, the guys with these leads, like I think you need to take that even more into account now. And like, okay, and the Spurs are down 2-0. Like, Wemby's going to be, he's going to be chucking more than we're used to.
Would you like to walk us through, brief parenthetical aside here, would you like to walk us through your mindset as that game was going down into the final seconds that you were sharing with me off air?
I know exactly how this is ending, Gil. Victor Wembanyama is absolutely getting this last shot. He will take it no matter what. And
so
this
far, so good.
Made shots is where these legendary stories begin. Yeah. And clank!
You know, it's funny. I didn't think he was going to make it. First of all, I thought the 2-for-1 shot, which you absolutely have to go for.
Oh, it was awful.
Remember, the Spurs had the ball, 2-for-1 situation. I thought that shot was just a settle.
Dude.
It was such a settle. I was like, oh, God.
You know what? This is maybe the greatest amount of criticism on any part of Wemby's game I can have through this point in his career is he is way too good. He's too good at knowing the 2-for-1 situations that he ends up putting up terrible shots just to make sure he locks that in.
You know what else I heard was funny? I was laughing out loud.
Mitchell Robinson played good defense, but
I was literally laughing out loud. So you know how like a couple, I don't know, it was last week or the week before, during the Western Conference Finals, at some point in the playoffs, I was saying, I was like, you know what I really love about Wembanyama? That as ornery as he is in the sideline reporter questions right after a game, he's like has no time for that. But I love that in the post-game presser, the one that's actually staged behind a desk, right, or behind the dais there, he pauses for 5 seconds. He's deliberate. He thinks about what he's going to say, and then he says it. And I was giving him praise for that. And I heard somebody say the other day, I wish I could remember who said this, but they were like, nah, that's not what it is. He thinks Americans are so dumb. that he's like, all right, let me see how I have to articulate this for these idiots to understand.
Or the question was so simple. Yeah. Let me dial back my complicated answer.
Oh God.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I can't. This okay, before the Knicks fans get on me. This is not an anti-Knicks thing. I've had your back for most of the season, all right? Gil, I really need a 50-point Victor Wembanyama game in Madison Square Garden to relight the fire under this finals.
Would be awesome.
And come on. Knicks fans, come on. For the years that we've heard you complain, you've had it real easy for this past couple months. I mean, this has been a cruise through the playoffs. And for years, this is another one. Like Mitch Johnson, this is where I'm gonna give you a lot of crap. For the past 2 years, all I've heard through every step of the season, every step of the playoffs, the spine of this defense is too weak. Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns will be picked apart in pick and roll action over and over and over again. Not a single team has exploited that throughout this playoff run. The Spurs finally started to do it a little bit more at the end of game two. It's been incredible. It's credit to the Knicks defense, but also these other teams, you've got to attack the weakest part. It's still the weakest part. Brunson has not been burned much on the defensive side.
How about betting on the NBA Finals ultimate leader in threes made? Right now, Julian Champagne of the Spurs has 7 made threes through 2 games. OG Anunoby has 6 made. Champagne's -135 to finish the series with the most made threes. Anunoby, just 1-3 behind, currently is at +550. Then you have a couple guys that have made 4 threes, meaning 3 behind Champagne. Devin Vassell, Jalen Brunson, +550 and 8-1 respectively. And then there's Landry Shamet, who should be pointed out is only 1-3 made behind Champagne. He's all the way down at 10-1. There's Wembanyama picking up the rear. Is there a bet here?
Yeah, this that Shamet number, shop around. It's come down. When I was first looking at this on Saturday morning, it was 14-1 on him. I'm like, he's one three off.
He's 1-3 off. We just had Raheem on, right, saying he likes him over points today.
Yeah, he liked him over his 8.5 points. Yep. I mean, basically all he's doing is taking threes. You're up 2-0 heading home. If there was any bet I would make here, Gil, it is Shamet at 10-1.
Yep, I think that's the one that leaps off the page. How about rebounds and assists? Also, again, whether it's a 4-game series, 5, 6, or 7, that's the part we don't know, but that should obviously factor into your handicap. Rebounding leader, Karl-Anthony Towns. Cat has 25. Wemby and Josh Hart each have 21. Hart after that 15-rebound game one performance. Cat with the 4-rebound edge is at -205. Wembanyama's +160. Hart, for what it's worth, is at 16-1.
Feels similar to the threes. Josh Hart, you can get a 16-1 price. He was around this before the series began. He's 4 rebounds off Cat. I mean, if they finish this off in 4 or 5 and he has one or two more big games, he's right there.
How about assists? Assists, final category we'll look at here. This one, Jalen Brunson is co-short shot with De'Aaron Fox. Now, De'Aaron Fox and Josh Hart have the most assists through 2 games. Each of them have 10. Brunson has 8. Excuse me, Cat has 9, actually. Pardon me. Brunson has 8. Stephon Castle has 7. But look how these odds are all jumbled up. We show you on the screen here the odds and then the total assists in the right-hand column. So Brunson and De'Aaron Fox are both +190. Brunson has 8 total assists currently. De'Aaron Fox has 10. Then it's Stephon Castle at +230. He's got 7. Josh Hart, who has 10, is at 9-1. And Cat, who has 9, is at 25-1.
Yeah, this one's really tough.
I mean, wow.
I don't know that I'm running to make a bet here. I think that we're going to see.
You got to bet one of the long ones, though, if you do, right?
Right, yes. Yeah. And I think De'Aaron Fox or Brunson is likely who ends up winning this, leading the series in assists. But yeah, I'm not betting the +190 on.
Again, it's a whole different handicap if it's 4 mm-hmm. games versus 7.
Right, completely.
You know? Totally different. We'll come back. Wes Reynolds on multiple sports. And did he watch the Earth, Wind, and Fire doc? I'm curious. Next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, don't forget about the Just Win Bets Baby podcast. The duo that has had Kelly Bidlin on the show. Has had Danny Higgins on the show. Has Danny been on the show?
Yeah.
Wyatt Tomchek's been on the show. 20 leagues, one mission, Just Win Bets Baby is your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets Baby. The name says it all. They tweeted into the show as well today. They said, decision time, my friends. Cash out or let it ride. He's got Vegas to win the Stanley Cup at +950. Current cash out is, I can't really understand what the cash out is here. Nonetheless, my response to this would be, you bet them for a reason and they're up 2-1. Why are you looking to cash out? Why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed. Justin D., 0304 Pistons versus 2526 Knicks. What would Chrissy Andrews' line be? LOL. we laugh because Chrissy hates more than anything those kinds of questions. hates the numbers guys. Good morning, Gilly. Will you have any tennis plays this week? Probably not. First week of grass. Kelly, by the way, Serena playing doubles tomorrow. Hey, that's exciting. Victoria and Boko.
At the Queens Club?
Yes.
Which, by the way, I think that...
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, right?
Where the brick building is right on the court. I love that.
I love it, too. I walked in this morning. I was like, oh, yeah, I think I have this reaction every year when I see it, but it's awesome.
It's so great. He said, Kelly, does this quasi-slump of Scotty's come to an end at Shinnecock? Doesn't he usually play the week before a major?
Sure. There's a very good chance it comes to an end. He doesn't play the RBC Canadian Open.
No. I'm just saying, though, just like we talked about a couple weeks ago, we're getting to the point here where this is going to creep up. Scotty can't win a tournament. All of a sudden, it's going to be a thing.
You know what? I didn't really dig into his stats afterward, but I was sitting on the couch yesterday thinking, watching him play, and you're like, oh, there he is. There he is, top 20. Remember we were sitting here on Friday being like, oh, he's going to miss the cut.
Yeah.
Still pretty good.
By the way, here was the assist leader before we get Wes on. We didn't have the graphic up for the visual among you. This was the NBA Finals assist leader graphic. Those are the total number of assists through two games for those ball players. Those are the current odds, just to be thorough about it.
Yeah, not listed, by the way. Mikal Bridges, who does have 9, just one off the lead.
Not listed.
Yeah, not listed. Just throw it out there in case you got other books you could look at. Keep that in mind.
Poetic license by the bookmaker is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Wes Reynolds joins us now, ladies and gentlemen, from courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one part of the glue that holds this whole operation together. Wes, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Gil. Good morning, Kelly. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. First, let's get this out of the way. You have not watched the Earth, Wind, and Fire documentary on HBO Max yet.
I have not. That is the plan to do this week. Like we were saying last week, it should have come out on the 21st night of September, but maybe didn't have the foresight to make that happen. But I am looking forward to it because I think that, you know, I don't want to say underrated because, you know, they're Rock and Roll Hall of Famers and they're obviously legends and still doing it all these years later. But I feel like they're kind of one of the overlooked bands, right? So I'm glad that Questlove and all the production people behind this are kind of giving these guys their flowers a little bit here.
Are they overlooked? They're the greatest group of all time. You take the Beatles, just the Beatles are in their own category. Earth, Wind & Fire is the greatest group of all time. I met Maurice White, but he already had MS, so it wasn't like I didn't feel like it was a full meet where I got to really meet the man. But all of what they did, it was so different. Everything they did sounded so different. To this day, it sounds different from everybody else, all from that one man. And if I may, Kelly Bidlin, because I don't think I've ever told this story before, I had a bar mitzvah, this just in, when I was 13 years old. That's when people of my ilk become men. And part of the bar mitzvah, I don't know if you know this, you sing a Torah portion.
Oh, yes.
You know this? Okay. My Torah portion, because I was a perfectionist as a 13-year-old, right? In order to sing it, I wanted to have the same note to start every time. You know how I figured out how to have this start on the same note? The first note of Earth, Wind, and Fire's Getaway. That's how I started my Torah portion. Rabbi didn't know that. My mom didn't know that, but that's how I did it. Earth, Wind, and Fire's Getaway, the first note, was the first note of my Torah portion. I wonder if Questlove covers that in the documentary. I wonder.
Well, did you have did you do the Philip Bailey falsetto?
No, I did
on
not.
That first note.
No, I did not.
So you don't quite become a man to hit that high note. Right. So you didn't have a Peter Brady moment there.
That was the proper follow-up question, though, Wes. I do give you props on that. Let me ask you about the NBA Finals. You are dialed in, as we all are on this. You have a couple plays here tonight. Let's just begin with the side itself. How are you playing this?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to play a little bit more, you know, kind of split them, where I'm looking maybe first quarter and first half, you know, maybe have something on the full game. But I think that might be the way to go, you know, simply because you do have a team down 2-0. And the Spurs, I thought, look, they were really outplayed in game two and yet still had a chance, should have had a better chance there at the end, by the way, because I think a lot of what is glossed over, because obviously people remember Wemby's pass to Castle, where Castle's not even looking for the ball because Castle's thinking Wemby's going to take it. It's like, well, you're the lead guard, dude.
Brutal.
You're the one that's going to set up the offense, right? And they're not looking, and then Wemby compounds it by fouling. But one of the things that hadn't been mentioned a lot, did you notice on that last possession when they get the rebound and it's tied at 104, Mitch Johnson, who I think we all think is like a rising star in NBA coaching. He's kind of this modern day, you know, he embraces analytics and, you know, kind of coaches basketball like the way that the game is played now. But you notice situational basketball maybe a little bit weak, as I hit my mic there, where he's kind of like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. It's like, dude, you want to get the last shot, right? If you don't even get a good look, at least you're going to go to overtime. So I think, you know, that's the kind of the difference maybe between like a Mike Brown and a Mitch Johnson, because Mike Brown, I know, probably doesn't get, you know, as much respect as he deserves, having been to the finals and whatnot, won four times as an assistant with Golden State. But it's like, you've been there before. You've been in those situations, and Mitch Johnson really hasn't. So I thought that materialized in game two. But I do like the Spurs tonight. You know, I think that it's a bounce back. Whereas you think the team that's down 2-0, right, all the pressure's on them. Pressure's kind of on the home team, too, because of all this, you know, 1973 and, you know, first finals game since 1999 and, you know, with a certain guest coming tonight, are you going to get, you know, a late arriving crowd, which I think you could have potentially in the Garden because of security. Now they got to get there early. So I think the Spurs maybe come out a little bit looser early on in the first quarter and the first half. So that's the way I'm playing it.
Plus a half for the first half, plus a half a point for the first half, plus 2.5 for the game. You're gonna stick with that,
yes,
as well? Okay.
Yes, and also the quarter. If you want to go first quarter, I think there's still some pick'em out there. I know Circa has a pick'em and a couple others, because you're starting to see maybe like minus a half, minus $1.05, because we know people like to play that angle. So the books aren't going to give you a cookie here. Like they're going to tax that, obviously, with the desperate team down to come out early. But I do think that they follow suit and they come out very well early tonight.
You know where I thought you were going with that Mitch Johnson aside? Do you think Mitch Johnson should have called timeout?
Yeah.
That was the other thing. I was like, well.
Yes.
That was always an option.
Yes.
That's where you and I were texting right after that play. It's, yeah, whose fault is it? I'm like, that's where I could put blame on three different people here. Yeah. And I think it actually starts with him. Because it is either these guys got to know what they're going to do out in a situation like that, or you got to call a timeout.
Dude.
Well, I don't know what your hurry is. I don't know. You know, with 14 seconds left to go, it's like you get this to overtime and you're the Spurs and you've kind of been swimming upstream or running uphill, whatever analogy you want to use, virtually the whole game, except for the first quarter. You want to get that to overtime. Like, that's a win for you if you get that to overtime. I think at home, you'll take your chances. And it's like, even if you get a bad shot after a timeout in a tie game, you'll take that. And I just thought, you know, maybe a little bit of mismanagement there in terms of late game situations.
And Brunson makes one of two. Wemby misses the potential game winner, and the rest is history. You have a prop bet tonight as well, Wes.
Yeah, and usually I'm going kind of against what I like to do here, because oftentimes when you get an increase in price, I like to kind of sell, or you like to buy a dip when somebody has a couple disappointing games, but I'm going to play Dylan Harper over points and rebounds here. And it has climbed. I think it started at like 14.5 in the series, and now it's going to, or 15.5, I should say. And now it's going to 19.5. They got to have him on the floor, yep, at the end of the game, period. And you saw he kind of, I think, lifted them to that rally late when Castle went to the bench, when he kind of tweaked the ankle a little bit. Harper's your best transition guard. The Spurs want to play in transition. Knicks are obviously taking that away well enough, but Harper's the guy that really pushes the pace, and you got to have him on the floor. I think you see him get a lot bigger minutes tonight, so that's why you've seen the bump in price.
I like it.
West going, Dylan Harper, over 18.5 points and rebounds. Lay a little juice on that, about minus 125. More with Wes on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
Back on the numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Billa. I am told that Questlove did not cover that in the documentary. weird. The bar mitzvah getaway thing?
No. It's a choice.
It is a choice.
Yeah.
Not a good one, but it's a choice.
You're leaving out a big part of the story.
Yeah. Spence on Twitter says, Questlove Summer of Souls, also an excellent doc if you're looking for a musical doubleheader. We're getting to that time of year where we're looking for other things to watch. Not quite yet, but we're almost there. World Cup coming to the rescue, though. Kelly and I, don't forget, we got our World Cup mock draft coming up. Oh. Las Vegas 514, yo. Does the UFC know that gnats don't want your blood? They're actually drawn to your heat and carbon dioxide and salts found in your sweat. That's right. Between the humidity and the gnats, good luck, UFC. And then Brian Point Schaefer, I'm not sure if we've corroborated what you just said. Are you telling the truth on that? We shall see. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us for a second segment. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. Wes, did you have any JT post in this week?
I did not, and apparently nobody did, because you really didn't see him coming, because he's a guy, he's played solid golf this year. He's made 9 of 12 cuts, but he didn't even have a top 20 finish coming into this week, and he's not a guy that's necessarily a big nor accurate hitter off the tee, and he had 3 PGA Tour wins coming in for his career, but he's won on all kind of easy, scoreable, birdie fest type courses, like right here in Vegas at TPC Summerlin, won the Shriners a couple years ago, won the Wyndham at Sedgefield, won the John Deere Classic. I think I hit one on him a few years ago at TPC Deer Run. And these are courses you got to shoot like 23, 24 under to have a chance to win. So it's like, can he, you weren't really thinking of him necessarily at the Memorial, because it's a tougher event, and it's obviously usually, at least in recent years since it's become a signature event, it's the class players that win this thing. It's Scottie Scheffler. It was John Rahm. A lot of really good players, even though you have a couple long shots here and there. But no, I had no JT post in this week. He did not pop at all. So, congrats to the few and the proud that did have him, but I think that number looked very, very, very small this week.
Yeah, we had a listener, Neil Galbraith. I think that's how you're saying
congratulations,
your last name.
Neil.
111-1.
There you go, Neil. Well done.
I missed his tweet to me yesterday at the wee hours of the morning, because round 3 got suspended, so they had to finish that before they started the fourth round. I missed a tweet. It must have been 4-5 a.m. our time or something, asking about pin positions, because he was sweating that.
Any relation to former Saints running back Tony Galbraith?
I don't know. I'll have to ask.
Who was a backfield mate of Chuck Muncy back in the day with the Saints. What about the RBC Canadian, Wes? Anything preliminarily here?
Yeah, this week they are in Toronto for the RBC. So you do have some guys playing, but you also have some guys taken off this week with the prep of the U.S. Open. And then today, by the way, you're talking about stuff on the sports calendar, maybe to loosely monitor. There is U.S. Open qualifying today, and it's the last chance to dance for some of these guys. So they are in sites across the country and also in Canada to try to make that U.S. Open next week. But top of the board, like Matt Fitzpatrick's playing, Tommy Fleetwood is playing. I haven't bet anything yet. I'll probably have something on Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
Oh, because, the irons have just been so good. He was not in the Memorial Field, because keep in mind, he is back full time on the tour, but because he doesn't have the FedEx Cup points, like he misses a lot of these signature events. So he has not played here in a couple weeks, I think since Dallas. So well rested. I think he's going to come in, and I think he's probably going to play well here. It just seems like Brooks is a guy you want to look at. Michael Tjor-Bjornsson could be another guy that you play this week, kind of looking for that first win. So a good field, but not a stacked field this week, as you have a lot of the elite, Scotty, Rory, and the like, taking off this week to prep for Shinnecock next week.
I'm kind of laughing over here, because this is 2 weeks in a row where the first name that Wes mentioned was the first name that I thought of and mentioned too, Brooks Koepka. Yeah. Didn't work out too well last week if you backed us on Justin Thomas. He did squeak inside that top 20 eventually, but it did not work out too great last week.
You did say Brooks Koepka earlier on the show.
I'm right there with you, Wes. That one jumped out to me as well. And we are back in Toronto. We were there 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, Osprey Valley, TPC Toronto is where they are, because they do switch it every year, a couple of years, like they're at Oakdale and Hamilton. And, you know, predominantly they play this in Ontario, and certainly they're going to play it in that province when you're in the Northeast for the U.S. Open. So they don't play this every year. You're right, Kelly. So you have to kind of look at different data and maybe not go as much on last year as you certainly went on 2 years ago.
I am strangely obsessed with this. I brought this up with you a few weeks back. I'm more obsessed with it based on if we'll ever see the market reflect what I'm talking about. Namely, Scottie Scheffler has not won a golf tournament since he won the American Express in La Quinta on January 25th. That's in the that's by Indian Wells down there in the Coachella Valley, I believe. January 25th, 2026, his 20th career PGA Tour title. Here comes the U.S. Open in 10 days, not even a couple weeks, 10 days. And I sort of talked about, okay, when does this become a thing, right? He's making tons of money, right? He's always up there. He's making 700 to a million, 700,000 to a million, it feels like, every week, give or take a few bucks. So he's enriching himself, but he's not winning any golf tournaments. When does this become a narrative in golf media? Hey, Scottie Scheffler can't seem to win a tournament anymore. And for our purposes, when does this change in the market? Or is the market going to lag that narrative?
Yeah, I think probably in July, guys, is it, because, of course, next week, the U.S. Open, that's the last major to complete the career Grand Slam for Scottie Scheffler. It is also the week of his birthday, where he's going to turn the big 3-0, by the way. Like I'm just laughing at that, because it's like he's only turning 30 years old. Look at what this guy's already accomplished and maybe still has yet to accomplish. So, you know, there is that narrative, turning 30, Father's Day, you know, and now a second-time father, had the little one right before the Masters, his second child. So, you know, it kind of fits the story, right? Like, oh man, he's got to win it here. Like, it just sets up perfectly for him, right? But there is that pressure too. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to go as long as Rory did to win the Masters, where it took him a decade, a little over a decade, actually, to complete the career Grand Slam. But I think once you get to that, maybe as we get into July, if he doesn't pull off the U.S. Open and doesn't win like the Travelers or one of these other events in the lead up to the Open Championship, maybe you see the co-favorite role with Rory there at the Open, because people are going to obviously want to bet Rory to win the Claret Jug because he's done it before. So that's when you may see a little bit, I don't want to say changing of the guard, but he'll have company, I think, at least as a co-favorite role, if he doesn't get this U.S. Open done or the Travelers.
I think my answer is what I sort of hinted at in the preamble, which is, okay, let's say he doesn't win any of these. Yeah. And by the way, it should be mentioned, all it takes is one win and it's just going to go away
totally,
right?
Yeah.
But let's say this continues, and let's say it does start to creep out, like somebody who's doing the broadcast says, you know, Scottie Scheffler hasn't won, you know, and this becomes a thing. I still think, because he's performing so well, I think for the whole calendar year, it's still going to be Scottie Scheffler is the guy.
So here's how I would answer it. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we start just the national non-betting media. We're already starting to hear this, yeah, and it's going to pick up. The only problem is, like, unlike the Masters, like it felt like we were entering the Masters, and Wes, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong here. It felt like we had all these guys that were coming in such great form that were pushing the likes of Scheffler. I think the only difference now is I look at kind of the top of the odds board. I'm like, you know, none of these guys are on heaters like they were before the Masters, like Cameron Young, like Matt Fitzpatrick, kind of pushing the rest of those guys. So, I don't know that his odds are going to move a whole lot when you don't have those other guys pushing you. And you know, maybe that changes here in the next couple weeks with a win by Rory or a win by a Cameron Young or something like that again. But, Wes, I don't know about you. That's kind of how I view it right now.
Yeah, I think, Kelly, you're right. Like, I think it's the mid-range guys that maybe are showing a little bit of life. Those guys that are, you know, 40, 50 to one type pricing. And then some of these guys, it's like, when do you buy in? Like Tommy Fleetwood, obviously, yeah, was in contention last week at the Memorial and then kind of made a mess of it on 17. And it's like, he got close and then he makes a mistake. And that's kind of been his bugaboo. I think you're at least stateside, but you know, Tommy Fleetwood certainly makes sense at the U.S. Open, considering he was second there to Brooks Koepka last time they were at Shinnecock. But yeah, a lot of these guys aren't really pressing him. And then some guys coming back from injuries, Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland. So, he doesn't really seem to have that like rival, because Rahm has been kind of erratic with his form on LIV. He loses again, finishes second to Tyrrell Hatton at Valderrama. So nobody really is up there that I think is going to change it that much. But if he kind of flops at the U.S. Open, then I think you see a change.
Wes, well, this is a terrible question to ask you on June 8th. Who's in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to say the 49ers.
Wow. Glad I asked.
And the 49ers and the Denver Broncos.
Wow.
Wow. All right. Okay. Wes Reynolds, everybody. I guess we got some homework still got to do for that guy.
Yes, we do.
Oh, my. Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Coming back. World Cup mockery.